Hey, it's John. In a lot of ways, this episode will represent a new beginning. As you may or may not know, James is unable to co-host NHP this season. We had a lot of fun together, so thankfully he'll be returning as a recurring guest. I'm so happy for where James has taken his career, and I wish him all the best moving forward. With James' departure, however, I needed to pivot the show and take it in a slightly different direction. So this season, I'll be bringing on some guests, some you know, some you don't, to provide a well-rounded look at the Islanders and the NHL. I'm excited to be back. Let's roll. Welcome back to the Nasman Hockey Podcast. Thank you for sticking with us for the long-awaited return of the show. And if this is your first time listening, thank you for joining us. As I said in the opening, James sadly had to step away, but I'm happy to welcome as my first of many guests this season, my longtime friend and a lifelong Islander fan, Brett Nicholas, for the first time on our show. Brett, thanks for being part of the NHP family this season.
Hey, John. Thanks for inviting me on. I'm super excited to talk Islanders today.
I think an easy way for us to get into a groove here, and this wasn't in the notes that I sent you, a little surprise.
Okay.
talk about some of your favorite Isles memories. You and I have been to games together. I think the last two games we went to together were at the Coliseum, and they were playoff games, if I'm not mistaken. I don't think we've been to a game at UBS together.
No, definitely not. I've only made a couple, handful of UBS games. So,
same. But we went in 2013 for the Penguins series, and we parted pretty hard. I think that was like the really hard tailgating year, and they had the car out front. They were mashing up with the sledgehammer, and then the first last game, as we were talking before we hit the first last game of the Coliseum against the Capitals, which was amazing. But does it have to be a Coliseum memory, just a favorite Islander memory, recent or a long time ago?
Can I give you two really quick old ones and then maybe one more recent one? My first Islander game was, I have the date because I looked it up before this podcast, kind of anticipating you asking me my history of a fan. So April 16th, 1998, the Islanders played the Tampa Bay Lightning. It was a 4-0 win. That's kind of when I became a fan. I did not know that both the Lightning and Islanders were bad. I was 8 years old. They were both bad teams, and I got brought into this life of being an Islander fan from that. So thanks, I guess, to that game. and then I also, back then in the 90s, my dad and I used to buy last row seats because my dad had long legs. He liked to stretch out. And if you remember, Vitra used to be a sponsor of the Islanders, and they do Vitra seat upgrades. And we won them, and we got to – moved down from like the last row to like the seventh row behind the bench. And the entire game, there's just a man behind me going, "LaChance, you suck." If you remember Scott LaChance.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was on the Islander. So those are all two funny memories, but I probably, I mean, the best memory has to be, the first playoff series when they won at the Barclays Center since 1993, Tavares scoring the goal. And I mean, maybe he scorned us a little bit and hopefully we're all over it at this point, but that was a super memorable goal, and it was the best game I could have been to.
Yeah, I think we've been lucky, and one of the last our last episode actually in April we were talking about we've had a lot of good memories in the recent past.
Yeah,
with the Islanders, and we're really lucky, especially '90s fans and early 2000s fans who did not have a hell of a lot to look forward to. Like watching an Islander game was a little bit of a chore, outside of certain players, maybe. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't very exciting. So I remember we were talking about how the Islanders just, they blew that lead and they lost to Carolina. And it felt a lot like game 7 in 2015, where they just didn't show up, or they stopped showing up. And there's obviously a very different group of players, but it just felt like it was that culture that just somehow permeates throughout time. And it doesn't, unless you were there, it's a silly kind of thread to try to follow, but feeling like an Islander fan, I guess it's a lot like being a Mets or Jets fan. It's something in the air between those three teams that just is losing.
It's a Long Island curse.
Long Island curse.
Even when the Islanders are good, or have had their good seasons, how many times have we watched them unable to string two passes together? That's been something that I've been watching the Islanders since the day I started watching hockey. They can never string passes together, and it was all last season. That was something we had to deal with.
Yeah, and they were literally running into one another.
Yeah.
Like three of them just ran into each other in the neutral zone and fell down. And you were, and I think it was in the playoffs too. It was just maddening to watch what looked like just a bad high school hockey game. And as we played together growing up, so we know what bad high school hockey looks like.
Yeah.
And it was,
I know what a bad pass looks like. I've done a million of them.
I played last night. I probably flubbed a couple. I definitely did. So yeah, I know, I definitely know what that looks like. And so, as I said, I appreciate the memories. I think that's a good way to kind of kick us off here. So we left the show in the middle of the Islanders series with the Canes. I really don't want to rehash everything. We kind of started this conversation already, but as we have, you know, we're a week or so, we can change away from the beginning of the new season. What do you hope the Islanders leave behind as they move forward? You know, this is shaping up to be, for the second year in a row, a slightly different roster, but it's been some pretty big pieces that have moved out. What are you hoping they leave behind this year?
Man, I got a long list of things, but the first thing I think they need to leave behind is the truly awful penalty kill. I don't want to see that. Also, like, that was the most demoralizing thing. Whenever they took a penalty, no one was going to be in the back of our net. I guess another thing that's like right away off the top of my mind, and we'll probably talk about it a little bit later. Cal Clutterbuck's gone. I think I'm ready to leave behind the obviously Seekers is going to stay, but I'm ready to leave behind Matt Martin as well. And we'll get into it later, but, definitely just like we can move on from that best fourth line in hockey finally.
It was a moniker, I think, that held on way too long.
Oh, absolutely.
It was purely just, I almost wish the team was bad for their own sake so they could just get one more run, or maybe just last year was it. But it felt like we were hanging on to this thing thinking it was helping.
Yeah.
And it just stopped working, and to the point where Cizikas was just not on the line anymore. I think he was also not on that line because we needed a first line winger, and then it worked, which is very strange.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. I think it's I think we've held on to things as Islander fans a little too long. Nothing made me happier than the Islanders being able to stay and stick around. And as much as I love the Coliseum, I'm so happy that's done. I don't want to talk about it anymore. I'm happy they have a new home. We've been there a few years now. We can just kind of move on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's a nice arena. Like, it's perfect. So
yeah. Yeah, I've been to a few. I know you've been around too. Like, yeah, it feels like a true NHL grown-up professional arena.
Yeah,
which is super cool. And Barclays wasn't, I mean, other than the sight lines, wasn't terrible. Mm-hmm. But this is even leagues ahead of that. And then Barclays is still pretty new.
Yeah, Barclays was just cavernous though, and like sound just escaped it. It just never felt like a home. It was just, we were just there.
Yeah. It, without knowing any of the details at the time, it didn't feel like there was a long-term play there. It kind of just, yeah, like you said, it didn't really feel like home. But okay. Continue with, what you'd like to leave behind here.
I'd say two more. They're quick hits. I don't want to see terrible 5-on-6 play. When we have a 6-on-5, when we're up by one, we got to score empty net goals. We got to stop letting them in our net. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. At the end of the game. Yeah. It was, I mean, I don't think the power play was great either. So it just,
no,
the special teams in general, it just didn't work. There was just something there. Hopefully Duclair has something to do with, at least the power play being better. And if Barzal, who scored a shorthanded goal this preseason, if I'm not mistaken, if he's actually going to play the PK, that would be kind of different. It would follow suit with some other teams, so that could be good. But yeah, late in the game. When you're down, or you're talking about down 6-on-5.
No, I'm talking about when we're up. When they were up, they couldn't get an empty net goal. You know how many games we let up a goal in the last like 2 minutes, say, when the other team pulled their goalie? We didn't get an empty net goal, I think, until the last game of the season or close to it. And we were constantly blowing leads. You know how many games went to overtime. It was infuriating to watch.
Yeah, I actually try. I you used to actually know that number and was keeping track of it, but
yeah,
it's either been too long or I purged it because it hurt my brain. But yes, I misunderstood what you were saying. Absolutely. We need to score empty net goals when we're up in the game and the other team has pulled their goalie. Absolutely. That was beyond infuriating.
Yeah.
Especially when it could have made the difference of being top three in the Metro and maybe having a different, being seeded differently going into the playoffs. It could have made a huge difference.
Oh, absolutely.
You know,
we left so many points on the board. And then I guess further that shootouts, I want to leave behind terrible shootouts. Can we have one guy that can score a shootout goal?
Yeah, surprisingly, they've not been able to recapture the Franz Nielsen.
No, we don't have the Danish backhand of justice.
The Danish backhand of justice. I mean, you'd think Barzal would be able to do it. Maybe Nelson's been one of their better shootout guys, but I think the problem was I don't think they made it that far a whole lot last season. They were they'd lose an OT. I forgot a lot about last season, and not just because we didn't do the show over the summer. I think that was one of the longest seasons in 10 years or so, or a little bit longer. It feels like the early 2010s when it was just so hard to watch this team.
Yeah.
Like I said, if for a long time it's felt like a chore, but there was absolutely nothing pleasurable about that. And it almost felt like they made the playoffs to score on us for five more games. It wasn't a good time. It just did not feel good to watch any of these games. Have you watched any of the preseason? Have you been kind of following along with what's going on with that?
So I've been keeping up with the preseason on Twitter and watching clips where I can. I didn't have my access set up yet to watch the games, so I haven't been able to fully watch them. I was watching right before we started recording, though, because it was streaming on the Islanders website. I got to watch today's game a little bit. I don't know if you caught any of that. They had four power plays in the first period. They still can't carry the puck into the zone, but they did score a power play goal. So,
yeah, I think it's the later in the preseason it gets, the harder it is in some respects. You think they'd just be like clicking a little bit or starting to, but it's really the first time that
They're trying to get up to game speed.
Yeah.
It's just watching them play. You know, the Flyers have a game tomorrow, so it's their B squad tonight. And the Islanders are basically NHL squad. They're missing a couple guys. And they still are struggling to get in the zone. But again, like you said, it's preseason. They're just getting in game shape. I'm not going to ring any alarm bells, but it was a little frustrating to watch it take until the last minute of the first period with four power plays to score a goal.
Yeah, and I think something else with the preseason in general, I think not ringing the alarm bells is a good kind of thing to keep in the back of your head, but we're going to get into the roster a little bit and kind of and dissect that. If you go back any preseason, I have no recollection of what the lineups were, who those like players and all these things were, and it's always somebody random that pops up anyway. Maybe Slipikov is that guy that just we have early, but it's rarely, you know, it's rarely somebody, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's last year Goche might actually do it, and you know, or Hudson Fashing is gonna just be this really big difference maker, and then it turned out to just be some guy, Kyle McClain. So it's kind of hard to make that distinction and try to pick apart different things and who's gonna make it and who's gonna be really good. So I'm trying not to pay too close attention, although they don't have a lot of,
there's not much change happening this year.
Well, I think any change that happened is already there. Like you kind of have your group. There's no more Sebastian Aho. There's no more Clutterbuck. Yeah. Matt Martin, as, the Islanders anxiety guys say, he's on the shadow team and just like going to be hanging around the team in case somebody gets hurt. You know, he lives on Long Island. Martin's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you kind of have your guys. Some might have to go through waivers. I frankly have not been paying too close attention to that. I know there's a couple that, you know, Old Duke, I think, has to go on waivers. They may be afraid of losing him. So that might be a late cut. But
that's why he stayed up all last season. I think he had waivers last season. he basically was getting no serve. He wasn't ready for the NHL, couldn't go down to the AHL, and kind of just sat in there and got an occasional game.
Yeah, the Islanders have been not blessed, the opposite of blessed, cursed with a bunch of like quadruple A players that they do pretty well in the AHL. Looks like they can take a step and just can't do it on a regular basis in the NHL.
Yeah.
Sebastian Aho had his moments. Bolduc, I think, looked okay here and there too, but
yeah,
it just on a regular basis, it just, you know, Oliver Wahlstrom, who by all accounts should be, you know, at this point,
full-time a solid,
yeah, a full-on NHL, wherever he's going to be, whether that's a third line or whatever, but just like it, there's just something. One of my bigger problems, hopefully we leave this behind, and Bridgeport was terrible last year too. And I think the coaching staff changed there. We have not been able to produce a forward in some time when they've
spent
time at Bridgeport.
Well, Brock Nelson, I think, is the last like true forward to come out of there, right?
Yeah, the D did great. There was a time when every single defenseman, this is some time ago now, maybe over 3 years, that every single defenseman had come through Bridgeport. And it was phenomenal. I don't know that there was another team that was doing it quite like that. But the forwards, so you're going to miss on draft picks, sure.
Of course, yeah. But every single one of them is.
Every single, right. Like, it's just, you're just ringing the bad luck lottery like every single year. It's like, okay, you got to be able to turn something in here. But yeah, so there's been some kind of some roster turnover over the last 2 years. And we've actually seen some of the biggest changes, I think, to this roster in a really long time. Bailey, Bevilier, Clutter, Martin, to say the least, among, you know, some other players on the fringes over that time. But I'd sent, you know, you and I were talking about the blog post that I wrote, you know, the remaining roster spots up for grabs, who's battling for them. You know, you have these players who weren't able to put complete games together, like we said, vying for the last two spots, maybe save for Sibelkov. You know, we don't really know a whole lot about yet, although he had a really sick pass to Gauthier in one of the early
preseason games. You could say they said he's not, Lou said he's not coming here to play in the AHL. I'm sure he has a European out clause. So if he goes to the AHL, I would almost bet all my money he goes back to KHL. Like, just, but he did bring his wife and family here. So maybe he does plan staying. But I'm excited for him. I don't know. I've
heard
only good quotes. I know. But I've only heard good quotes about him, which, of course, they're going to say that stuff in preseason. But he seems like he's fitting in and he's doing all right. I'm excited to see where he fits in the lineup.
Yeah. So for him, Wahlstrom and Engvall, you know, those are the three players you'd really expect. And you can throw in Holmstrom too, who's kind of been jockeying around the lineup a little bit during the preseason. So, you know, if you're a guy, you're not battling stalwarts here. Like even within that group, it's not really the best of the best. Yeah. And so if you're, you know, a guy like Fasching who's hurt, or Gauthier sneaks in and you're left out to dry, like if you're Wahlstrom and you don't make this lineup,
it speaks volumes for you.
You're really done here. Like there's nothing left. There really is no other place, especially a Sibelkov who just kind of comes out of nowhere. I think if you're any one of those other players and you hear that they sign this guy and he's coming in and he, you know, Lou says he's not playing in the AHL, that's tough. Like whatever your offseason training plan was, you have to find a way to step up. And so far, it doesn't look like that was what happened.
Yeah. Sibelkov is a little bit of a different situation, though. He did score 31 goals last year in the KHL. The guy seems to have more talent than the standard, like, 25-year-old Russian that comes over. Like 12 or so teams were supposedly speaking with him. So, I think it's not as insulting if he gets his rough spot over. He like doesn't really say as much. But yeah, guys like Holmstrom, Engvall, Wahlstrom, those guys do get Fasching. Like Wahlstrom really is the one who, like, just, that guy should be in the lineup. And if he can't crack it,
yeah, it's been, you know, losing it to, again, guy comes out of nowhere, Kyle McLean. And if you're Gauthier, that doesn't feel good either, right? Like he's, I think I wrote in the blog post, he has 100% lived up to his billing as, you know, a glimpse of speed and skill, but most of the time just doesn't live up to it.
Yeah.
And so to have just a lot of these players kind of in the mix, and I think, you know, into the season, if there are injuries, it's going to be really nice to have kind of this backup of, okay, if Kyle McClain is hurt, you have a Hudson Fashion, you can kind of replace them. Some of these guys are just around, like Gauthier's not a bad fourth liner, that makes sense. But it, when those are the guys like battling for the spots, and you're like, who can actually make a difference here and make the team better? I don't know. A lot of it just seems like one good habit for another bad one. And you're kind of, that was last season. You had guys coming in and out of the lineup, and who could make up the best roster on, you know, on a game day. And it was, I don't know, a lot of just little trade-offs. It just, you know, you were gaining skill, and maybe you were gaining speed with Gauthier, but you didn't have the skill. And then Wahlstrom couldn't really keep up, but he had the skill. He just needed to put it together. And it just was kind of like one mistake after another. They just, like, you know, comedy of errors with the roster last year.
That's been Lou's, like, MO for a couple of years now, where he just can acquire more depth pieces than anyone would reasonably need, but he can't round out the high-end talent of the lineup that's needed.
Yeah, and then we'll get to Engvall, because I think that, like,
we could talk about him for a little while.
Yeah, I think that's exactly the player that we wanted to talk about. And by tonight, which is, I believe, the last preseason game, Wah was vocal, you know, in late last week about wanting to get that lineup settled and really kind of fine-tune that as they were going in those last couple of games to get the full lineup a chance to play together. So I want to go through each of the lines, and sure, some will be a little bit easier than others. I know you have some notes on some individual players, but that first line, Tony Dukes, Bo Horvat, and Matt Barzal, I don't remember a line that I think has the potential to be as good as these guys are. Maybe, is it a Poso, Tavares, and Vanek that had a hell of a run? Like, was that the last time it was?
Oh, when they were like good? The best line in the NHL for a little while.
Yeah, it was like in November or something.
At that yeah, season. I think that was the line that was tearing it up. Or is that Molson wasn't involved in that line, was he?
Because
that one year where he scored like 30 goals 3 years in a row. That was probably the line. I think the first line has a lot of potential in the line. I'm excited for it too. It does feel like we have that. And I'd like the Duclair is a little bit of a wild card though, right? He always seems to cobble together at least a 20 goal season, no matter where he is, or at least 20 goal pace, as long as he's injured or whatever, or he played less games. But is 20 enough from your first line? And he's going to have more opportunities here. He's probably going to be on the power play. He's getting the first line minutes. So maybe he will score more than that. But that's my only concern. Like, is 20 goals enough from like one third of your top line?
I mean, given that we've not really had that, where even if Horvat and Barzal are carrying the majority of the mail, and he's contributing 22 goals on the season.
Yeah. I mean, that's Barzal 23 last season. So
yeah, but the two, I think the three of them together now, to your point, and adding to it a little bit, Duclair is no stranger to playing with all-stars, right? He was on a line with Point and Kucherov.
Yeah.
And I love Horvat and Barzal. They are no Kucherov and Point.
No.
So this is kind of a step down, but it really, I think that the X factor here could just be maybe Duclair just clicks a little bit better with Barzal.
And they're both fast. So
they're both fast. And I think what my hope is that playing with somebody, and you'd think Cizikas would have helped with this a little bit, but maybe not. And what we've seen in the preseason so far is that their two-on-ones, the give and goes are beautiful, but I think Duclair is really forcing Barzal to use his straight ahead speed. If you go back and watch some of those clips from Barzal's rookie season, he's just beating defensemen down the wing. Mm-hmm. Just straight ahead speed. He's not doing these big long skates through the neutral zone and trying to weave in. He is straight up beating players. Like, you watch McDavid, he does it all the time. Duclair looks like he's kind of pushing Barzal to do that. He's kind of creating a little more pace, straight ahead speed with that. And that's what they really need. And then Horvat will clean up the mess. He'll third guy high, or set up one or the both of them to score a goal. And I think the chemistry here, if they actually click, can be the thing that really pushes them completely over the edge.
So since we're on the first line right now, last season they were 22nd in the league in goals for the whole team as a whole. So like one of the things we need to do this season is find more goals. And do you think Barzal can be part of that solution? Can he hit 30? You know, Crosby every season, you know, he would always come back and be better at something. Barzal, I think, tries to do that as well. And last season we saw him go from, you know, I think he had, so I don't remember, two seasons ago, goal total, we had 23 goals last season and he had his career high in shots on net. Can he up it and give us 30, 40 more shots and seven more goals? That's what I'd like to see from him on the top line. And if Duclair can help him do that and we get him and Horvat scoring 30 goals, that's a huge swing for the Islanders. And that would almost push him into playoff territory alone, because seven more goals would have done it for him easy last year.
Yeah, and I like that perspective of just, can the first line score more goals? I almost don't care if it's, you know,
I don't care who's
player gets 20. If they can get 75, 100 goals, I really don't care.
They're not going to get 100. That's.
I don't care how it's split up. It's kind of irrelevant. But if they can all get in the 25 goal territory and somebody kind of eclipses 30, that's amazing. And that's, you know, Nelson, if you want to go to the second line, has that opportunity. Dude scoring over 30 goals a season. Like, just the older he gets, he seems to be, you know, matching it every year.
It's a contract year, so you know how those always go.
Yeah, usually really good for the team in the year, and then they'll re-sign him, and then it doesn't go well. So
exactly.
Make or break, I think, for the Islanders is, you know, with Brock Nelson. And I hope he stays. I don't want to get into that too early. Mm-hmm. I want to continue to enjoy Brock Nelson, who I feel like is one of the players I can actually like vividly remember almost their entire career, kind of like Anders Lee. Mm-hmm. Like in my adult life, I've watched them kind of become Islanders.
Do you remember like the Islander draft parties they used to do?
At
the Coliseum.
Yeah.
I remember going to one of the draft parties with my friends, you know, and Brock Nelson is, I think, like a year or two younger than us. And I remember being on the floor walking around, and he was there, like standing next to me. And I was like, that guy's going to be in the NHL, because he looked so small, like so skinny and frail. He looked like me. I'm like a very skinny person, and I'm not very muscular. And he looked like me. And I was like, this guy is going to be in the NHL. And here he is scoring 30 goals every year. So,
yeah. And he's pretty tough out there. It's not like he's getting bowled over. So yeah, I guess you get into your late 20s, you finally fill out all the way.
Yeah.
And I think that line where we went into last year, I think with a little bit of confidence with Engvall, Nelson and Palmieri. Now you go, okay, well, you got Palms and Nelson. There's some chemistry there. It took a little bit for Palmieri to turn on, and he turned out to, did he have 30 goals?
He had 30 even last year. He hit it on like the second last game of the season. He hit that 30.
So it took him a while to, you know, I think he was coming back from injury. It took him a little bit of time to kind of get back up to speed. So, you know, there's some potential there. You have, that's two second line guys that had 30 goals, you know, to say the first line couldn't also do that. We'll see. But then you're kind of thrown into the mix, either Simon Holmstrom or in tonight's game as we're recording this on Monday evening, Slipikov. And every year, you know, and just, I want to get your thought on it too. Every year for these others, for every other NHL team, it seems like random dude pops off like 30 goals, 10 assists, helps the team get in the playoffs, Conn Smythe kind of postseason, and just has, they have a great run. And it never happens with the Islanders. It's just never, it's, you know, their usual suspects do well. They kind of do their thing and they make the playoffs, and whatever happens after that is magic. But for it's never like, for a second, it was Simon Holmstrom. He's scoring all these shorthanded goals. You're like, this, amazing. Well, wow, we've never had this. Just random guy shows up that was like in the farm system. And one year he just decides, I'm in the NHL. Here I am. And I'm not trying to put that pressure on Slipikov. Mm-hmm. But damn it, would it be great for that just to work out for the Islanders. And for a franchise that just seemingly can't get that kind of win, when they finally have a kind of dominant first line, to have somebody like that would truly be that extra step. You know, that second line as it stands, what are you thinking as far as the regular season is concerned?
Man, I think it's going to be the Slipikov on it, and maybe he's that guy that pops off that you're hoping for. When you were talking about that, did you ever see that tweet about the Penguin? Because I think when you're thinking that like every other team always seems to have this guy that pops off, I think we don't – you notice it because it's always – they're always playing with a superstar, right? And there's like – it's pretty old now. It's at least like 5 years old at this point. But it's like someone's like, the Penguins always have some guy on their team and they're like Mark Donk and Buzz Flippett. And they both have 47 points or whatever. And like, that's kind of what you're alluding to. I think Maxim Slipikov might be that guy for us. That's what I'm hoping for. I think he belongs on the second line because the other option is Holmstrom. I don't think he fits in. So I think it's that Nelson Palmieri Holmstrom line. And I think that, or sorry, Nelson Palmieri Slipikov line that can actually be a second offensive threat for us.
Yeah, I don't know. I think if the given and something I wrote about this week, if that first line can be as dominant as we hope, it'll take a lot of defensive pressure off the rest of the team. So Nelson, I think, who have just kind of always thrived in that second center role for maybe for
he's
that
a perfect reason. Second line center. Yeah.
You know, and I like Palmieri's game. That's when I thought about the way that I played, it was always like, ah, he could score a couple goals, but just like kind of running around out there and giving him hell. You know, he's throwing hits. He's kind of snarly out there. When I see him on as a second line forward who can also score 25 or 30 goals, I think it's really good with Nelson, who's no slouch. He gets involved physically too. So if they can both take that pressure off Slipikov, and he can just use his speed and do his thing and kind of be silky out there, it'll only benefit Palmieri for sure. And Nelson seems to be able to just take care of himself.
I think Palmieri though is also kind of a question mark, right? He's kind of a player that shows his age. I feel like he's in the last year of his contract as well. So it's contract year for him and Nelson. So maybe that'll work magic for us. I don't think we should sign Palmieri no matter what he does. I think unless it's like an absolutely incredible season, like a 50 goal season or whatever, then sign him. Sure. But he's not going to do that. Yeah.
But even then he's not going to do it twice. So whatever magic he kind of it lays out there, unless he's going to take, I don't want to get too far ahead, but unless you're going to sign him to like an Engvall type deal with not 7 years, obviously.
Please no.
We already have that person. So I don't really know what you do. Like you kind of I don't really like the saying, but like the internal trade deadline pickup is like, we have our guy. Like we're gonna lose
by the end of the season.
And I guess when it applies to us, we can like it, but like he can be that guy. And he's versatile. He can, you know, if they want to switch up that second and third line, there's some versatility there. I think. So kind of just moving players around, but Nelson and Palms have done really well together. So hopefully they can be good line mates to Slipikov there.
This episode is brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook. TD, Tutty, in for six. Touchdowns matter more at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. We don't care how they score them. We want to bet on touchdowns, and DraftKings Sportsbook is delivering. Ready to place your first bet? Try betting on something simple like a player to score a touchdown. Go to the DraftKings Sportsbook app and make your pick. This Sunday, the money line is -355 for the 49ers against the Cardinals. Make your pick now. Ready to do a touchdown dance of your own? New DraftKings customers bet $5 to get $200 in bonus bets instantly.
Score big with DraftKings Sportsbook, the number one place to bet touchdowns. Download the Sportsbook app and use code THPN. That's code THPN for new customers to get $200 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort, 21 plus age and eligibility varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. For additional terms and responsible gaming resources, see dkng.co/ftball. This episode is also brought to you by BetterHelp. As adults, it's hard to make time to learn new things. Kids are always learning and growing, but as adults, sometimes we lose that curiosity. What's something you'd like to learn? Gardening? A new language? Maybe how you finally beat your best friend in bowling. Therapy can help you reconnect with your sense of wonder because your back to school era can come at any age. It's helpful for learning all sorts of things, like positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited for your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Rediscover your curiosity with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/THPN today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/THPN. Third line, Lee Pageau. And I don't know who's there tonight, but presumably Holmstrom.
I think it is Holmstrom there tonight right now.
Slots in there. I think this line just needs to not suck. Like, I think their mission is to go out there.
Be defensively responsible.
Be responsible. You know, have Pageau win the draw. You know, I don't think maybe to the same degree as the fourth line, but just, like, give everyone a rest. Don't cause more problems. Maybe draw a penalty. You know, contribute. You know, Lee scored 25 last year, or at least 20.
Yeah, Lee had. Let me tell you, he had exactly 20.
So it's not like they can't contribute. Pageau can score. Obviously, Holmstrom can score shorthanded. And maybe Pageau and Holmstrom are a pair on the penalty kill, and they can really just get chemistry playing in every situation together. I think that'd be really great. I don't think I have high hopes. I like I said, I think I just want them to not be bad. Yeah. What are your thoughts on this line?
Yeah. Kind of similar. I don't want them to be bad. I have it as the same thing we talked about, Lee, Pageau, Holmstrom. You need some offense from them, right? Your third line can't be a black hole. That's kind of like your fourth line's the get it deep line. So the third line does have to chip in something. So yeah, we don't want it to be bad. I don't know. I want 15 goals maybe from Pageau. I want 20 again from Lee and Holmstrom. Can Holmstrom be consistent finally?
5-on-5 would be great.
That's the key to it. Like, he was great in the beginning of the season, shorthanded. I kind of petered off too. But like, if he could just put a full season together and just be a consistent player. He doesn't need to score a ton. We do need some from him though. Just grind it out, be that third line team. And it goes back to to the first line and the second line. If the first line is eating up the minutes against the tough competition, Brock Nelson starts having an easier time. He's scoring goals and his line. So they're playing the second toughest competition, right? That opens up an easier time for your third line. That's like how every team is structured to do that, like to make the minutes work for everyone.
Or if you're going to be the team that's, you know, one of you need to shut down line too.
Yeah. So
if you're going to be defensively responsible and be part of the shutdown unit for the Islanders, at least go out there and, you know, when I didn't play a good game, I've said this on the show before. If I didn't play a good game, what, you know, back in high school or something, my mom would say you were figure skating out there. And we don't need a line like that. We can't have any, what do we say, passengers, whatever these coaches are saying these days. The passengers deal. We need everyone to contribute in some way. And we need to see it. Like, we need to be like, wow, they had a really good shift and they held off the Sidney Crosby line or whatever.
That's what their job's going to be probably. Like, it's going to, the third line usually does try to take on the top line. But is anyone on that line able to skate the puck out of the zone? And that's kind of concerning because I don't really feel that. Maybe Holmstrom can, because I don't think Lee can. Pageau is kind of slow too. I don't know.
Pageau might be the quickest of the bunch. Lee, every once in a while, his speed surprises me. And I don't know if it's because he's racing somebody that isn't that fast or Pat something. Maroon. Yeah, he's hit Pat Maroon or Ryan Reeves or something. No, that's very funny. So I can't really tell. Every once in a while, he does surprise me, though. I have to pay a little bit closer of attention to that this season. I don't remember Holmstrom's speed, frankly. I don't remember it, which doesn't mean it didn't happen, but it just means that, you know, it wasn't enough for it to stand out anyway.
He does have some speed. We saw him score shorthand goals. That's really generally how you score a shorthand goal, right, is a little bit of speed.
Yeah, getting a jump, you know, blocking a shot or, you know.
Exactly, and then pushing away from the D. Bit. Yeah.
Maybe. I think that's a really good point, though, is, you know, who can actually get the puck out of the zone. Depends on who their defensive partners, who defensive pairing is that are playing with them. Mm-hmm. You know, like a Mike Riley type will skate it out. Pellick can also do that. Dobson's no stranger to that either. So I think that no matter what, maybe that's just what they're going to rely on. They just need to be, I think, positionally sound and just be able to move the puck out and very quickly. I don't need to dump it every single time, but just get the puck out of the zone. And that was something that I think the whole team struggled with last year, was just an inability to cleanly break the puck out. And it's at every level. I think that's the funniest part of hockey, maybe all professional sports, is that problem exists at every level. Mm-hmm. And so it's really interesting when a team really struggles with it for an entire season. You can't figure out what the problem is, and just watching them kind of fumble over each other literally and figuratively when they're trying to get out of the zone was least enjoyable. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that this line doesn't. Yeah, I think black hole is a good kind of metaphor for this, because I think for the last 5 or 6 years, the third line has been one of those like problematic things that you pretty much had everything, and that third line was just really, they just couldn't put it together.
Yeah.
The fourth line, and then we'll get into the extras and talk Engvall. Sure. As it stands, Kyle MacLean, Casey Cizikas, and right now Gauthier, and that leaves Wahlstrom bashing Martin with an asterisk and Pierre Engvall. Mm-hmm. I don't really want to talk too much about Gauthier because I don't think there's a whole lot to say. So yeah. I kind of want to go into this discussion thinking that it's MacLean, Cizikas, and Engvall here. I don't think that's in stone by any stretch. Somebody could beat out Engvall, and that's a different problem. But those three players, that's a very different fourth line than what we're used to seeing.
Yeah, absolutely.
How do you think, I mean, what do you think about the line, but their deployment and Casey Cizikas' game, which I'm actually hoping we can get another 15-20 goal season out of him with just better offensive partners, like younger, quicker, whatever. But what do you think of that fourth line?
I really like MacLean. I think he's the perfect fourth liner. I love Cizikas. I mean, what Islander fan doesn't really love Cizikas? So there's those two, happy to have him on the fourth line. Engvall, maybe that's finally a role that fits him. I don't know. I'll be honest with you. When I was writing down my lines for this team today and what I wanted to like see and what I want to talk about, I forgot about Engvall. I didn't even put him in my lines or in my extras. I just forgot about the guy because he's so unremarkable to me. I'm not a big fan of him. I don't love. I don't think there's an Islander fan that likes the $3 million, 7-year deal, the $21 million deal. And maybe, like, talking – as we're talking and you're saying, like, I think it's going to be Engel, I'm kind of talking myself into it being maybe something that works. Because he is fast. If he all he has to do is get the puck deep and just prevent the other team from scoring on you, maybe he can do it. Because you just never see that offense from him. So just relying on him and keeping the puck on the other end of the ice and cycling in the corner, maybe that's something he can excel at.
Yeah, the three of them would have a lot of speed. The issue is he is not physical. He is a specimen. Yeah. He is in amazing shape. Does not throw the body. He's like Josh Bailey out there. He's like shying away from every hit.
Yeah.
And
I'm not a fan.
No. Yeah. I think unremarkable. He is a forgettable player. I always remember him because of the contract. And we're in year two of it.
Yeah.
So like the reason why I'd put him on there is because I feel like you have to, like, he's getting paid. I don't want to say too much. I think that the difference between like Sipelkov at like whatever it is, $775 and $3 million, it's really not that big of a difference. It's really just the length of the contract, and it's like it's year two. You got to give him a shot here.
$775 to $3 million though is a big difference. That's $2 million. That's another fourth liner. That's $2 million more you could have gone to get a star, like a star to play along your top line. So like those small errors, like that's where Lou drives me nuts, because he always makes he's been offering these contracts up that eats up the money that's supposed to be added around the edges. So he's just like giving these players unnecessary money for unnecessary term and locks us into a position where we can only nibble around the edges every year. Like Engvall is now eating this roster spot for at least four more of his six more years left. Like maybe with 2 years left, you can start getting rid of him. And the salary cap's going to go up. So it'll start being less percent of your cap hit. But right now, those are the mistakes that make it unable to build a contender. When you have a guy sitting there making $3 million, but he's playing like a $775,000 player.
Yeah. And with the speed and the strength that he has, I mean, it's the problem he had in Toronto, and it's something that we also saw in the first year with him, and he has to put it all together.
Yeah.
You see those little flashes. He can score goals. I don't think he's not awful, but yeah, unremarkable for a guy that seemingly, you just watch him skate three strides and he's more than halfway down the ice. It's like, yeah, he should be really good. He should be just skating circles around everybody at all points. Yeah.
He has a really long neck, so he should be putting crazy head fakes on people.
Just be distracted by the neck. Imagine him in a turtleneck. They'd have to just like add a whole extra
two shirts. Yeah.
That, like, what is it? Tom Bukanik and Alexei Yashin with those old
turtlenecks. Yeah.
God, I love those. They're so great. Yeah, I hope it just like whatever the fourth line is. I kind of want Gauthier to work. I don't know if they can trade Engvall, maybe just waive him. I don't know what you do with that, frankly, if he's not in your lineup. You just kind of sit him until you need him. I'm annoyed about Fasching kind of falling off, and but I'm happy we have a McLean. So it's one of those things where it's kind of like the first line where we just need the chemistry to work.
Yeah.
Like I don't really care who's in that third spot. Frankly, it could be any one of those. The Wahlstroms, Gauthier, Fasching, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's kind as long as it's not Martin. Frankly, I think to your point earlier in the show, we just don't need them there. But if it's any one of those players, I think it's kind of irrelevant. Just kind of go in there and crash and bang. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's Wahlstrom's spot. I think he's been kind of tried there.
I don't think that's not his role. That's the problem with a guy like Wahlstrom. He is a top two line type of player. That's like where he belongs, but he hasn't put the skill, he hasn't shown the ability to be there. And then you try to put him in another place and doesn't seem to be working out too hot.
How many goals did he have last season?
Oh, not many at all. Yeah, he didn't play much at all.
The last couple seasons, it's been so tough for him. I think there was a season where he had 6 points. It's like 5 goals or something like that. It's just been, I don't want to say talk about unremarkable, but he had 32 games last year. He had 6 points.
Yeah, 2 goals, 4 assists last year.
And 193 games, he has 34 goals, 33 assists. It's not what was meant for him. That should have been a single season stat line for him. 34, 33, 67.
Yeah.
Like that, I think that's what every Islander fan hoped he would be. I mean, maybe more than that, but that's pretty good. Being a 60-70 point guy is excellent. 34 goals a season.
That's like his rookie year, like his first real rookie year where he played 44 games. He had 12 goals and 9 assists. That's not too bad for a rookie in half the season, but he just could never replicate that.
Yeah. The next season, he had this almost exactly the same stat line in almost double the games.
Double the games, yeah.
So, and then it was just kind of, it fell off. He got hurt. And in 30 games, I understand you're not playing every single night, and that's really hard. But two goals and 4 assists is unacceptable. You have to find a way. You're not even putting up a fight. And you have to be able to contribute in some way. Like, be just a good third line player, or be really good defensively. Do something. And I think that's a problem with Engvall, right? Like, you just, it's a Gauthier that we're paying more money.
Yeah.
And a lot of speed, some skill, and then nothing. Just like, no finish, nothing.
But Engvall and Wallstrom do something similar where all of a sudden they will score a goal that's like an amazing shot. And you're like, oh, so you guys can do it. Just, you can only do it once every 10 games, if that.
Yeah, I think that's the tough part here. I'm trying to think of a comparable, just like in your regular life. I guess sometimes you're good at some things and not others. And just when you're in at that level, though, like you're at an elite level, maybe you're just getting picked apart. I don't get it. I don't know how Wallstrom's been in the league a long time. I understand injuries. Engvall, you've been in the league a long time.
Yeah,
figure it out. Like, do something different in the off season. Whatever you're doing, your approach to your game, get it. I don't know. For Engvall, it's not a lack of training. There's an on ice thing. He's almost like a kid that just doesn't know how tall he is, and he's like 14, and he's like, it just can't put it all together. It seems like something isn't computing.
Yeah. He had Engvall did give us 10 goals last year, so like that is maybe a third line, fourth line role. If you're getting 10 goals on your fourth line, that's not too bad.
I think if he just fits in, I think as a chemistry thing, as long as it doesn't look like there's two guys really trying out there and banging bodies and being a pest, and one guy skating really fast. You can't be noticeably different in that way.
Yeah.
I guess if you're just going to score 10 goals, that takes a little bit of heat off of you. But I think as a whole, they need to be able to kind of contribute, more of the sum of their parts kind of deal. And that was what the fourth line was for a long time. So this is going to be a reinvention. I think some of those spots, I'm not confident that Holmstrom could hold it down. So it's not like Engvall has just one spot to make the roster.
No,
I think that there's a third line spot for him too. Between Sibilkov, Holmstrom, and Engvall, I think there might be some yo-yoing there and just trying to figure out, unless Sibilkov really pops off and is just consistent all year, I imagine he gets put down on the fourth line for a second just to kind of cool off and like not to be taken completely out of the lineup. Yeah. And Engvall does get put back. Or Holmstrom gets put back. And those three players I see kind of moving up and down as the season goes on, just waiting to see what works.
Yeah.
And maybe Sibilkov plays really great with Pedro for whatever reason. And that just clicks. Then you keep it. You're just working things out.
But here's the other problem Lou created, though. We're so against the cap, we can't carry as many extra forwards as like normal, right? We can only carry 22 out of 23 over roster spots right now. So we have to lose someone probably to waivers along the way.
That might be Wallstrom.
Yeah.
I don't know about Fashing's deal at this point.
Well, he's injured right now.
Yeah, he
might go IR and that might solve our issues and kick the can down the road for a little bit, but
Yeah. Well, Lou's pretty good about figuring out some kind of way. Going to the back end, and they never get, I think, enough credit until they're not talked about enough until they're playing like shit. And then we yell at them. But not a lot of surprises here.
No, it's a returning lineup, basically.
I think Mayfield is the biggest question mark. Mm-hmm. Coming off the injury, you hope that he can kind of just bounce back. Mike Riley, I think, is a really good partner for him. It kind of just leaves him the responsibility of being the tougher defenseman and kind of let Mike take care of the offensive side of things. But I'm hoping they're just not relied on as much. I think in the past,
well, there should be a third pairing. So
yeah.
But last year was terrible injury luck on our defense. Everyone was injured. So things got thrown into flux. So if Mayfield and Riley can be just a third pair, I actually think it's fine. Mayfield has another 7-year contract, just like Engvall, that I don't love, but Mayfield's not a terrible defender. Last year wasn't great. He had his ankle injury. So we could write some of that off. He's not a terrible defender. His big issue is penalties, right? Every time you turn around, the guy's walking to the penalty box. And it's not just last year. Like, you could excuse last year for the ankle injury. Fine. I'll let you do that. But the prior 2 years, he had the same amount of penalty minutes, essentially. Like, he's averaging like a penalty minute per game. So every other game, he's taking a dumb penalty.
Yeah, there's a line where I think, you know, you want to be a tough player, but there's, you know,
defenders are going to take penalties. You're a defenseman. You're going to take penalties. I don't begrudge it, but.
Yeah, the Stadium Series game sticks out to me.
Oh, God, yeah.
Quite a bit with him in particular. So, yeah, I think that's, I don't think that he was bad, but the kind of things on the outside really kind of just recolor my whole vision of him. So like it those penalties just make me think like I don't want to deal with him. So if it wasn't for that contract, he might not be back, but maybe he's not as bad as I'm remembering, but it wasn't great. So if you can clean that up and him and Mike Riley actually just get deployed properly, and it really has a lot to do with, you know, Dobson Romanov, I think, continuing to just be really good there. I think they were a great pair.
Yeah.
A lot of the Islanders' fortunes ride on Pelikan Pulock returning to form. They have not been the same.
Yeah. And that's, Pelik is the one who scares me more than Pulock. Pelik is a lot like Mark Edward Vlasic, right? Vlasic was the best shutdown defenseman in the league for a little bit. And then all of a sudden he's not good at all. Right.
A lot of injuries.
Yeah. Pelik has a lot of injuries, and is that going to be what happens to him? I hope he can regain his form. Under Trotz, you know, that's when he learned how to properly pinch and learned how to when to sit back. He kind of lost way of that with Lambert. I saw lots of, like last season, a lot of times he was making what seemed like the wrong decision. But maybe he'll get back into form now. At least I hope so.
Yeah.
But like you had in your notes, you had that they want to return. They want to return form. They want to be that formidable shutdown pair. So they know that they've lost a step. Let's see them bring it back. If they do, we're talking about a lot of ifs today, right? If all the ifs hit, this is a great team.
Even if half of them hit, it really depends on which ones.
Yeah.
You know, the if around someone like Sipelkov or Engvall just like being normal everyday NHLers isn't what is going to make up a playoff team. It's going to help them in the playoffs to have those players, but that's not who's really making it happen. Mm-hmm. So you need there's some kind of big ifs, and we're going to get to maybe the biggest one.
Yeah.
in the goaltending at the moment.
Sure.
I think it would be wrong to not lead off with the Sorokin injury. I think the main story with Sorokin, just he's injured and has not been seen skating, other than we were told he is skating. But I thought it was interesting how Lou came out, did his normal thing about something about
he had an injury, he's fine, he'll miss some time, whatever, without being specific. Then Waugh comes out and says, so the surgery he had for his back, it's not the perfect thing, but I do think he'll be fine. I do believe we have such a good medical staff. They'll take care of him, you know, whatever. It's interesting how Lou doesn't, like, you think Lou yelled at him? You know, that's just, like, not the way that it works typically, I think, right? Like, Lou's like, no, we're going to keep everything close to the vest, blah, 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 and then Waugh. Now a couple times has just kind of let the cat out of the bag. And
I hope Waugh continues to do it.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
Because one of the things that drives me nuts about Lou, and I complain about this all the time, that hockey, like the NHL and hockey, it's entertainment, right? That's why we watch. And Lou is like the antithesis of entertainment. He just wants to give you as little. I always joke, like, if it was up to him, he wouldn't televise the games and he would just be like, Islanders won today, Islanders lost. And that's all we'd know.
Yeah, maybe not even the score.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It'd just be like, okay, good. So, like, I hope Waugh keeps pushing the envelope with him because it drives me nuts not having any information.
Yeah, I can't remember where it was that he gave the quote. Like, I don't, whether it was at the rink or whatever. I'm interested, like, behind the scenes. The two of them going head to head, I think, is very interesting to think about, given, you know, how we've seen kind of Waugh react and we kind of know who Lou is. But then the storyline is that we haven't really, the main story or the main event is Sorokin is yet to be seen. It turned into, he'll miss maybe the preseason. He'll be ready for the start of the season, but you'd think he got a game in.
Exactly. I'm a little nervous now. Elliot Friedman was saying, like, you don't really worry during the first week of preseason. You start to worry during the second week of preseason. And that's kind of where we are. We're in the second week now. He's not playing today. We have one more preseason game after this. So maybe he plays that one. It doesn't seem like it because he's not skating in practice. So I doubt he plays it, which means you're probably having Varlamov start your year for you, which is fine.
It's not the worst thing in the world.
Varlamov had a totally good season last year. Like, if Varlamov can be consistent with what he had last season and Sorokin can turn true to form, we have probably the top tandem in the NHL. Because Sorokin goes back to Vezina form like he was 2 years ago, and Varlamov is a 1B. Like, that's a great tandem.
No, I think that's all you can hope for. Even if Sorokin doesn't get all the way back, coming back from an injury like that and surgery, and he's somewhere in the middle, maybe erring towards on the better side of things. Yeah, it's still a really good tandem, but a lot rides on the goaltending being good. I think that's the biggest if. You know, everything they've managed to win games, God, screwing everything up. And it was just Sorokin that bailed them out, or Varlamov that bailed them out. So if there really isn't anyone back there to do that on a regular basis, or Varlamov just is old and gets tired, or whatever the case is, I forget how old he's, 35, 36 years old. I mean, you're wearing down a little bit. You're not, you know, maybe you don't want to be playing every single night, especially in the start of the season when everyone's got a lot of jump. There's a lot of players that are, you know, just trying to stick around in the lineup on other teams that they're going to be coming at you full force. So it's not the easiest time. You're not in full game shape. You can pull something, you can get hurt, and whatever he is in his mid 30s, from experience, real hard to bounce back from certain things. It takes a lot longer these days. Obviously I'm not a professional athlete, but our bodies aren't going to be, you know, a whole lot different other than he's probably in a lot better shape than me. I think thinking about the starting tandem, it looks like Hogberg is going to be
the backup.
I honestly don't know a whole lot about him. I don't think he's played a whole lot of games. I know he's played in Ottawa, but last season I don't think he started very many games. So this is interesting to have a guy kind of backing you up who not only didn't play a lot of NHL games, didn't play a lot of hockey. I don't know if he was injured. I didn't look too far into them, which would be really embarrassing if I had a podcast. But I don't know a whole lot about him. And it doesn't look like, you know, Skarić is just, I think, a forever AHL goalie. The other guy, I can't remember his name, is got beat up pretty good during the preseason.
Tikkanen?
Yeah. Tikkanen is probably destined.
He's going to the ECHL, yeah.
And then the other player who I think they haven't signed for a few reasons is Keith Kincaid, which, amazing story. Love that, you know, Long Island guy.
Yeah.
You know, skating, and Lou is like, we're going to do him a favor. He's doing us a favor. And I think that's great. But they're, like you said, they're at 22 out of 23 in the roster, and they can't add anybody. And then the other thing is they have 47 of 50 contracts. So you're really, you know, if Martin is going to come back and be that 48th contract, then you add, if you need Kincaid in some way, you're at 49. Now, there's some stuff coming off the books next year. There's a lot of guys on one-year deals. It could be easily, you know, I don't think it'd be great. Nelson, Palmieri, and Wahlstrom contracts are gone. Probably all these other guys are one-year deals too, that if you're just signing them to, you know, from PTOs like Kincaid and Martin. So you can kind of make it up. It's only for this season. But it's hard if you're going to make a trade and maybe receive two players in return. You're just dealing with kind of every single penny, as you alluded to earlier. You've kind of just kind of screwed yourself here.
Yeah. Back to Hogberg really quick.
Sure.
I just looked him up because I was curious. His last NHL start was the 2021 NHL season.
Was it that long ago?
Yeah, with Ottawa. He's only had 42 NHL games, 35 starts. He has a career save percentage of 894. If he's in net, I'm nervous. Like,
yeah, I'm surprised they're not going, like, again, I understand, like, as the argument I just made of why they didn't just sign Kincaid.
Yeah.
But at least he has like 150 games of experience, and has shown for the Devils in 17-18, he was fantastic. Him and Hall kind of brought them to the playoffs, but he's been good in the games, you know, the sparingly that he's been in the NHL the last few years. He's been really good. You know, he can just play two or three games and be fine in a month.
Yeah, so he can be that guy that holds the fort down for you while you wait for your starters to come back.
It's interesting. He's the guy with the most experience, the most NHL experience outside of the Sorokin and Valama. So it'll be interesting. Unless Kincaid signs somewhere we don't know, which I don't, you know, I didn't see anything pop up today. That'll be a little bit of an interesting situation. Hopefully, do they have any back to backs in October on the schedule? I don't think so.
Not that I can think of. Let me see. I know they basically start the season with like games every 2 days or every other day. Like they play on the 10th, the 12th, the 14th. Let's see. I'm not seeing any back to backs. They do. October 25th and 26th is back to back. Devils and Panthers, and they're their home team, both, or not the home. They're playing the Devils away, and then they're home against the Panthers. So at least like it's.
Yeah, day trip, yeah. And Allen back. So you hope by then Varlamov can, at the very least, play throughout October.
I would think Sorokin has to be back by then. Otherwise, something's gone way worse than we're told.
Yeah, and with these kind of things, you know, whether he's starting to practice, back injuries can be scary. It's kind of like
course, knees. Yeah.
It's any little thing, you don't want to tweak it. And I'd rather him be back 100%. I don't want you to come back and fight through it. In the playoffs, you know, long term for your career, I would suggest don't come back if you're hurt. In the playoffs, it's a little bit different. They seem to be crazy people when it turns into the postseason. But we're not there, and we're certainly not going to be there if you're not in an Islander uniform at all this season. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to say take your time getting back, because all of a sudden it's Christmas and they're floating around the 10 spot and you're getting nervous.
Yeah.
So come back soon, but be healthy. So whatever time you need, hopefully it's not terribly long, but yeah, hopefully that he can get back by at least by the end of October. I think that would be less than ideal, but it'll work. Any closing thoughts here? I think we're just over an hour.
Yeah. I think we covered everything I have down. I was going to say, I mean, I don't think it's that important. I'm hoping this is Lou's last season. That's one thing I want to leave behind. After this year, I would hope for a new GM. I have this theory that GMs, and there's not many of them left, that GMs that were around before the salary cap don't know how to handle the salary cap. And Lou is like exhibit A.
It's not a bad theory. I'd have to see what maybe some of those other GMs.
I looked it up. It doesn't really hold as much water as I hope. Like Don Waddell is the other one, but the Canes aren't that good. They can never round out that roster. The Canes are always like the writer's favorite to win every year. Like there was like, this is the year. I don't think that team's that good.
They were like the St. Louis Blues for a long time.
Yeah.
They finally won.
But... And Doug Armstrong's the other GM that has been around since before the cap.
Ken Holland, I think too.
Well, he's not a GM guy anymore.
Right, not anymore.
But he was a bad GM. Like,
right.
Like he had McDavid, which helped out the Oilers, obviously.
But Ken Holland went into that. He was Detroit. He like
which
is Detroit.
Which he once he lost Lindstrom, and it's like
my team. Oh yeah, the whole the perfect Datsuk, human, yeah. Zetterberg. Yeah. Yeah, the whole thing.
Exactly. So it's like these GMs that were around before the salary cap think they could just like magically fix rosters on the fly, and it's just a lot harder now. I would like to see a younger non-Lamoriello, because I don't want to say Lou is gone and Chris is in.
I don't think that, you know, Bridgeport hasn't been a beacon of hope.
No.
So it's not like you're coming in there and other than the relationship factor, I'm not sure what he brings to the table, not knowing a whole lot what's going on with Bridgeport other than they're bad. I don't know. I think he has a new contract. I don't know how much longer he can do it or wants to do it.
He seems to want to do it forever. He's happy in what he does. Like, and everyone loves him. Like, no knock on him. Like, everyone respects him. Everyone loves him. I just think he's done a lot for the Islanders, so I don't want to like say the guy's terrible. I just think the game's passed him by a little bit, and I think a new GM, a new voice can help straighten up some of the places where this roster is lacking. But you know what? This is kind of negative. Sorry to bring this one up, because it's negative going into a new season. We should have hope. So let's not talk about or let's not drag too hard on Lou. And hope that the roster he's put together for this year will get us. I think we're a bubble team. I don't think anyone would argue that.
Metro is weird. It could really go in any direction. And so to bring a little of that hope factor back, because I think on one hand, you do have a GM that brought this team to a really great place from despair and just not thinking like they would go anywhere. And, you know, sometimes with leadership on and anywhere where you could be at work, at sports, you can get them to a certain point, but there's a hump. I'm hoping that Wah is the thing that helps them get over the hump. You know, Trotz got him to a point. Maybe Wah can bring this roster, which has changed considerably since Trotz's last game. I don't think, I think if you watch and any Islander fan that watches a national broadcast, I don't know, will think Eberle is still on the Islanders and that it's just team from the 2020 run or the 2021 run. And it's the team or that Nick Leddy's still on the team or something like that. Like this is a very different roster. And I think the culture has remained the same. This is a new, this year, what Wah really needs to instill is a new identity, because without Martin, without Clutterbuck, without that thing that I think, I wrote an article a million years ago for the Hockey Writers that the DNA that we saw for a long time on this team was forged like Fight Night, like 2011.
Yeah, of course.
And that really, for as much as that roster turned over and changed dramatically over the years, that DNA was just there as this different team. And Trotz really brought it out of them in the best way that we had ever seen it. And now that a lot of those players are no longer here, they need a new identity. And I think that's the thing to look forward to, is to see who they really are in a full season under Wah. So I'm hoping that new identity and Patrick Wah can just bring them over that hump and make us, I don't want to say forget, because I think we had a pretty good ride for a while, but at least the most recent past, we can put that in the rearview mirror and say they're not that team anymore. They're certainly not what they were 5 years ago, but they're not the Islanders who blew a billion leads and couldn't stop a puck on a penalty kill and embarrassed themselves multiple times on national television. They're not that team anymore. So if they can, you know, talk end the show like we started it, if they can just rid themselves of that, I think altogether, obviously they'll be in good shape. So I'm hoping that's what we can look forward to this season.
Yep. And yeah, I'm predicting a playoff team, so we got that.
All right. Well, we'll mark it down and we'll see where we are. We'll,
I bet my mortgage on it, so we need it. We'll bet.
thanks again for joining.
Happy to do it. I hope I can come back and we can talk some more Islanders.
Yeah, well, you're on the schedule. We'll talk more offline to make sure that you're part of the recurring guest crew. I'm going to keep some of the other guests a secret. You'll definitely get to know Brett a little bit better, and some of these other guests you already know. And obviously James will be making an appearance in and around Devils games, which will be a lot of fun. So to wrap this one up, please rate, review, subscribe wherever you listen to or watch the show. You can follow us on Twitter and YouTube at Nassman Hockey. You can also subscribe to NHB the Blog on Patreon. It's free for now. I don't think I'm ever going to do a paid thing. That's a lot of work. I might just write when I feel like it. So you'll get an email and I'll post it on Twitter. You can read it. I feel much more relaxed doing that. The link will be in the description for you to check out and subscribe to the Patreon. And to take James' line that he said for 4 years, until next time, let's go Islanders.